Midge Murphy is a professional liability risk consultant. She's the first attorney to receive a PhD in energetic medicine and author of an amazing book called Practice Energy Healing and Integrity. So our conversation today is going to be focusing around the book that she wrote and how energetic healers and energetic workers can utilize this book to make sure that we are staying safe in the things that we offer. We're legally covered in what we're saying we're offering and what we're doing. We're staying ethically sound and morally sound in what we're offering and doing. This conversation is extremely eye-opening for me. We want to help people. That's why we're doing this, but we also need to make sure that we're covered. So today's conversation, we're going to talk about how to keep your website safe, type of insurance you might need, type of paperwork that you might need, common missteps that we see, and how to keep people safe in public events. There's so much in this conversation. It could have gone on for much longer than it did. And I really encourage you to read the book that she has written. It can be something that can help you stay safe and stay practicing and helping people for a very long time. Hope you get something out of the conversation. We'll see you on the other side. All right, welcome back to our show. Today, I'm joined by Midge Murphy. Midge is a professional liability risk consultant. She's an author, a very amazing speaker, and one of the main reasons I'm having her on today is she's graciously written this book called Practice Energy Healing and Integrity, The Joy of Offering Your Gifts Legally and Ethically. And for anybody that's in an esoteric realm, energy work, yoga teaching, anything like that, this is something that I think everybody needs to have or have an awareness that is out there for you to help get help from. So many times if I come across people in this industry that have little to no insurance, that have little to no understanding of the ethics that go along with the energy work that we're doing, but their heart's in the right place. They want to help. They want to be out there. They want to share their gifts. But they leave themselves open to some kind of legal repercussions, some kind of false advertisement, sometimes touting things that aren't medically proven, right? And so those are things that we don't realize can get us in a lot of trouble. And here is the blessed Midge Murphy to let us know all of the things and all of the ways to cover ourselves to make sure that we can still show up the way we want to and help the people we need to help. So thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom and for writing this book. I'm so excited to chat with you about this.
Oh, Adam, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. It's my path of service.
Yeah. And so if I'm not mistaken, you're the first attorney to receive a PhD in energy.
Energy medicine. Energy medicine. That's correct.
Wow. That's amazing. And, first, before we get into your content, how did you make that shift from, this legal work that you do into energy work, or was that already kind of there for you?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
that's quite a journey. I mean, I practiced entertainment law in Los Angeles for over a decade. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I had reached the goal that I wanted to become, a respected entertainment attorney. And then I just felt a little empty inside. I'd worked so hard, put myself through law school, became very successful, worked for the major studios. And I don't know if you've heard of the book Autobiography of a Yogi.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Paramahansa Yogananda. And so that kind of was an eye-opener for me, and it kind of shifted sort of where I was focusing next. And that was more on a spiritual path and understanding more about that aspect of my life, which I really hadn't addressed going through law school and trying to start a career. So one of the things that happened was I started to do a massive traveling. I co-owned an adventure travel company. Hmm. So I was doing high altitude mountaineering treks all over the world. So mostly in India, Pakistan, Nepal, wow. Bhutan, and also all over South America, Peru, Patagonia, Bolivia, Ecuador, etc. So I was exposed to a lot of very interesting indigenous cultures and different ways of sort of perceiving consciousness and reality.
Yeah.
And that was very eye-opening and enlightening and kept me sort of just searching, just looking and studying and being exposed to these other types of religions and cultures. So I think the turning point for me, however, switching into energetic work was in the mid-90s, I became a hospice volunteer at our local hospital here in Eugene, Oregon. Hmm. And through that process, I was there for about 8 years. I had an opportunity to learn therapeutic touch as a volunteer. And so I was like, okay, I'll try to learn this. This is curious. I don't know. But the thing that happened was when I learned therapeutic touch, I could feel the energy. It was so me, which is surprising because I thought, well, I'm an attorney. What am I doing reading energy, you know? So it's like, okay, but that kind of really spurred me on to even research more and realize this was a gift that I had. And that's when I was introduced to Norm Shealy and Carolyn Mace and went through my PhD program. And I really wasn't sure what I was going to do when I came out of that degree and getting that, going through the dissertation and all of that. But what I noticed is what you noticed, we talked a little bit earlier, is that there was this huge void here. I'm an energy healing practitioner myself. So besides therapeutic touch, I've been initiated as a Reiki master. I'm certified in matrix energetics, and I've been a student of shamanism for over 20 years. So I use a lot of shamanic processes when I do my energy healing work. So I realize I'm kind of this really interesting combination of knowing the energy healing world, but also having understanding of the legal and regulatory and business side of things. And so that's what sort of spurred me into realizing that in order for us as a field of energy healing practitioners to become more accepted into the mainstream healthcare field, in order to be a better service to our clients, is to be trained and have some education around the legal and ethical and risk management tools that you can put into your practice so that you actually elevate your practice and what you know. Because as you said, people have good intentions. And what I've seen over the last 15, almost 20 years I've been doing this is that everyone, for the most part, has good intentions. They just don't know any better. They don't realize that there are boundary issues. They don't know what it means to have a client-centered practice. They don't understand the dynamics of a therapeutic relationship. So there's much more that goes into being an ethical practitioner than just having a good intention. That just doesn't cut it. And people get harmed, and then practitioners can get into trouble. So I'm really, it's a path of service that my book, and I also have an exam based on the book. So with, yeah, which is great. So a practitioner can read the book. So what? Big deal. But if they have that certificate of completion that demonstrates they have a level of understanding and knowledge about the ethical and legal issues in the practice of energy healing methods, it's a professional credential. It makes them look better. It demonstrates that they've taken this training, and it's something they can show to their potential clients to legitimize what they're doing, because people are looking for professional practitioners who practice in integrity.
Definitely. And I love that, just listening to your story, it's we find these transferable skills that we might not realize that we have that can be used in other industries. And for myself, I came from restaurants and was there for about 20 years and GMs and management, director of operations kind of the idea. So I had a good business understanding coming into this. And when I My first foray into the energetic world was doing yoga teacher trainings, and it was great. I was able to help a friend of mine legitimize their business, get taxes, all the business license, all that fun stuff. And it on paper everything looked okay, but as we started doing these trainings, I started seeing a lot of very big opportunities for things to go wrong. And the main thing that I saw then, and I also, honestly I still see this quite a bit, is people being put into places they're not ready to be, and then not having the support that they need if something does happen, right? So let's say that you are having a you're going to a deep dive inside yourself, right? And you're standing in front of a bunch of people, and the teacher trainer is like, okay, I want you to go deep and tell me your deepest, darkest fear. And let's say that person does, and then all of a sudden that triggers a release, and that person starts to sob or break down. And I've witnessed this where the teacher trainer was like, you're not going deep enough, I need you to go deeper, dig deep, and just basically turn this human being into a pile of mush, and then was like, good job, go now go sit in the corner and listen to other people, right? And it's like, well,
That's
that person.
abusive.
Exactly, right?
That's
It's
abusive.
like the intention is good, right? We maybe have seen that happen before, right? We've seen somebody do this and was like, you know what, I can do that. And not having the full breadth and understanding of what that means. And then all of a sudden you put this human being into a very vulnerable state that's not supported. And you could have just cracked that person open and then not have the resources to help them. And then now they're just open, right? And so what's the next step from that, right?
They're going to sue you.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's interesting because, as I was moving into to yoga from my previous work, one of the things I started to notice, because about 5 to 7 years ago, yoga is just starting to get that corporatization. You see places like Core Power Yoga or Yoga Six, and these more corporate brands coming out. And with that, it showed me that the governing bodies are now seeing this as a legitimate income source for them as well. And the example that I had from that was ASCAP, BMI, and all of the music subsidiaries started calling the yoga studios and saying, "Hey, you're not licensed to play music in classes. You're not licensed to have your teachers play playlists. You're not licensed." Basically, they're saying that a yoga class is a live music event, and you need to be licensed so you can do that. And if not, we're going to come fine you $50,000, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so that was that first for me. That was that first kind of governing body that came in that I wasn't expecting because I deal with that in restaurants all the time. There's like four or five different ASCAP type companies we have to pay royalties to, but to see that to start to make its way into these independently owned yoga studios that have very little budgets, it's like, oh man, here's a curveball that people aren't expecting.
That's fascinating. I did not know that had happened in the yoga industry, but yeah, having been in the entertainment industry, I'm very familiar with those organizations and playing music and all of that kind of stuff. So that's interesting. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh yeah, most definitely. So with all that you do and all the people that you've helped, and you do website, diagnosis, you do a lot of different amazing things. What are some of the common things that you see that are just those common red flags that most energetic workers may be doing without knowing or maybe kind of just completely missing?
Well, I think we should talk about first where how do energy healing practitioners fit into the current healthcare system, sort of the legal and regulatory framework of people who offer licensed healthcare services to the public, because we are offering a professional healthcare service. So I think it's important to know that we kind of fall under the umbrella of complementary and alternative medicine, or CAM, as I call it. And I love the term that Michael Cohen, who wrote Future Medicine, he's one of the leading academics in this area, describes CAM as a consensus term that means everything outside of bio-Western medicine. So that's a huge group of modalities. All the indigenous cultures, the indigenous healing systems, herbology, Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, there's a lot there. So, but in that subsection of CAM would be considered the energy healing techniques or biofield practices. And right now, what people should probably be aware of is that in CAM itself, there are some modalities that are licensed in all 50 states. And the only one that is so far is chiropractic medicine. That's considered a CAM practice. Now, there's some practices that are licensed in some states, but not in others. So that would be acupuncture, Chinese medicine, that would be naturopathic physicians, that would be massage therapists, and also licensed nutritionists or registered dietitians. Then there's a whole nother group of modalities which we all fit under energetically, whether you're doing sound bathing or Reiki or healing touch or therapeutic touch or energy medicine, whatever it is. They're completely unregulated, except for there are some states that now require you, if you do any kind of hands-on energy healing work, you have to be a licensed massage therapist in your state. So if you are, I would certainly encourage anyone who's listening who does hands-on healing work, such as Reiki, that they take a look at the Massage Practice Act in their state to see whether or not they're exempt from having to be licensed or they're required to being licensed. So I think that's important because what people don't realize is that what's happening out there is that states are saying this is a completely unregulated field. It's all over the map. It's the wild, wild west. And so we are looking at licensing energy healing practitioners as a way to protect the safety and welfare of citizens. So licensing statutes really come from the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which allows states to pass laws and regulations that protect the safety and welfare of its citizens. So all the licensing statutes that you see for all the various healthcare fields, whether it's medicine or psychotherapy or nursing or PT, that's the underlying regulatory value of why states license healthcare professionals. So I kind of wanted to give a sense that this is where the field is moving, is to becoming more legitimized by becoming licensed. And so there's a lot of misinformation about that. But I think for a practitioner, what's important to realize is that the way they advertise their services, they don't have the proper documentation. The biggest threat that we face as unlicensed practitioners is being charged with practicing medicine without a license. And it's a big, big risk. And also psychotherapy, depending on what kinds of words you use. So those are the major risks from a regulatory standpoint that energy healing practitioners face. And the other piece is that there are some safe harbor laws, which I won't go into right now. But for instance, let's say on your website you say you give treatments, or you have patients, or you do therapy. Those words, the perception is you are offering licensed healthcare services. And licensing boards are routinely looking at websites for energy healing practitioners to say, hey, by the way, you're practicing medicine without a license. So they're not going to throw you in jail. There's a myth out there that's what's going to happen to you, but they will send you a cease and desist letter and they will shut your practice down, or they will make you come into compliance. So that's kind of the biggest risk that unlicensed folks face in offering their services to the public. And if you use any words on your website like insomnia, even pain, chronic fatigue syndrome, anything that's considered a medical condition, or words like anxiety or depression or trauma or PTSD, those are all considered psychological disorders. And as a general rule, only licensed mental health care professionals can work with people with DSM-5 disorders. So there's a big risk out there of being charged with practicing a licensed profession without a license.
When I got to that section in your book, that was one of the things that just made my jaw drop. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many people that I know that have those words on their websites, have testimonials with those words on their websites that wasn't even
Yep.
written by them, but it's still posted by them, you know? And
Exactly.
the legitimacy of how much that can get you into trouble just from having those buzzwords on there, really, it made me immediately go to look at my website, actually.
Yeah, the other thing people should understand about testimonials, there's some people say, well, it's my client. They can say whatever they want. They have a First Amendment right to do so. The answer is no. Once you've used a testimonial, it's considered a form of advertising. So, besides licensing boards, you have to be aware of Federal Trade Commission rules and regulations about how you advertise your services to the public. And the FTC is the regulatory agency that governs how services and products are advertised to the public. And they have very, very strict rules around what you can say and how you can say it. Express and implied claims are done. And so I would say that 95 to 98% of energy healing practitioners' websites are in violation of licensing statutes and violation of Federal Trade Commission rules and regulations. And you don't want to run afoul of the FTC. I'll give you an example. I don't know if you've heard of thought field therapy, but it's sort of the precursor coming into the whole field of energy psychology and EFT tapping. And so Roger Callahan was one of the founding developers of thought field therapy. And in the mid-90s, he had a website. And he was trying to advertise using, I think it was TFT, I think it was for either for addictions or maybe weight management, I can't remember. But, and this is part of the public record, the FTC requires if you're making any kind of a claim about a curative ability, about any kind of product or service, it must be supported by competent and reliable scientific proof. And what that means is double blind, placebo controlled, human clinical trials with a variety of re reviews and publishing in peer-reviewed journals. Well, there's been a lot, some studies done on energy healing methods, but the bottom line, he couldn't meet that standard. He was fined $50,000, and he also had to pay his attorneys, and he had to shut down his website. So it's not something you should be taking lightly. The FTC actually has guidelines that you can easily access on how to, use testimonials. Or yeah, testimonials or endorsements, they call them on your website. So you can certainly educate yourself about, where you shouldn't be going in terms of how you are marketing your services on the internet.
Well, with that and with the requirements that you were just speaking of, like trial, peer-reviewed papers, things like that, I mean, with energy work and with a lot of the work that's being done now with like, you know, tapping and sound healing, things like that, are we getting to a point to where we are finding regulations for that, you know, finding some kind of quote unquote provable results for the efficacy of what's going on? And, you know, is there going to be like a regulatory board for, let's say, Reiki, you know, or, you know, these things that we can start to prove so that maybe we can shift to placing some of this kind of testimonial or some kind of this verbiage on our websites or just talk about in general.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. One aspect is there is evidence base is a highly triggered word or words, because the government only there's a database they have, and there's a list of all what they consider evidence based practices, and there is not one single energy healing, energy psychology method that is listed on that database. So if you say something is evidence based, that's misleading, and that's in violation of Federal Trade Commission rules and regulations. Now, with respect to EFT tapping, I work a lot in that world. A lot of my clients and the training organizations I work with, where I provide the book and the exam as part of their core curriculum for becoming certified. What we can say now is that there's been a sufficient number of research studies done on the efficacy of EFT tapping that it should be considered an evidence-based practice, but it currently is not, or evidence supported. You could say that, and that would be accurate and within the laws and regulations that apply to this. So a lot of people just kind of throw out evidence-based without really understanding that it's, again, those words can be really triggering, put a red flag over your head, because you don't want to get a letter saying this is misleading, this is not an evidence-based practice, and then you're in trouble. So it's important to kind of know the nuances, but we are getting a lot more research being done. There's a Consciousness Healing Initiative.
Oh, okay.
They are doing a lot of research with Shamani Jain and those folks. So we're moving forward because that's what's important. Those are the components that need to be brought forth in order for the whole field to be more accepted. And the other piece that's missing, which I mentioned earlier, is nobody, unless they've done the training with me, that I have several organizations I work with, if they're not trained in ethics and legal issues, there is no way that that's going to be acceptable. Along with the research, this piece has to be completed in order for practitioners to be more integrated into the integrative whole health and to be able to expand their practices, have more employment opportunities. So we're moving slowly, slowly to becoming more legitimized. And the thing is, anyone can hang up their shingle and say, I'm an energy healing practitioner.
Right.
They can go to a weekend workshop. They can read a manual. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, that just doesn't cut it. That does not make you a professional healthcare provider. So it's being recognized as we know that these methods can really help, support health and well-being to so many people because they work, but we have to be able to access those folks in the public so that we can really be of service. And that's not going to happen until the research is done and this training in ethics and legal issues is more broad spectrum in terms of the entire field. And that's what the government's looking for.
Okay. And that brings up an interesting thing for me is that, with a lot of the new energetic medicines like ketamine therapies or MDMA therapies that are being now legalized in certain states and being able to be utilized. And now that's, making a bridgeway for a lot of plant medicines, like in Oregon where you're at, they've decriminalized psilocybin. That's something that's going to be happening in Washington soon. Colorado's already doing that. And opening up a lot of opportunities for people to start utilizing these different types of plant medicines and energetic medicines. Is the field of legality growing with that too, and learning to find ways to allow practitioners to hold that space, utilizing these medicines, but not maybe being a little more covered in that aspect.
Yeah, they have to be licensed.
Right.
Period.
Okay.
They have to be licensed here in Oregon. And there's a special training that they go through. It was a 2-year program. And here in Eugene, there is one center that has been licensed by the state to provide these services. Mm-hmm. The providers have been licensed so that, they're vetted and making sure they've had the proper training and dealing with people going through this kind of experience. And so that's how you safeguard the safety of the people, is you just don't let anybody open up, let's have some mushrooms and let's go do a journey. It's a very controlled and regulated practice so that the safety and welfare of the citizens who want to access these practices and this experience can do so as safely as possible. So the bottom line is you have to be licensed to offer those.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually there's a beautiful center, if it's not the one you're talking about, but it's called Third Wave, that's in the Oregon area, ran by a guy named Paul Austin. That's been just really one of the front runners in this, in the psilocybin world, at least, to get practitioners, certified on how to hold space and how to keep people mm-hmm. safe and all that fun stuff. And it's actually a training that I've been looking into personally for a little while now.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. They do that here. Well, I understand there was an article on our paper here recently, maybe in the last couple of weeks, and what's really interesting in I just find it really fascinating is that they have a huge waiting list. I mean, the public really wants to experience this
Yeah.
because there's been some really good research done on helping people through trauma and adjusting some, kind of as even a spiritual dilemma they might have. There's lots of different applications. So there's a huge amount of interest. There's a wait list for like, I don't know, almost a year to get in.
Yeah.
So you could see there's a need in the public and, you know, getting skilled and, you know, licensed practitioners that can offer these services. Sounds like that's something that'd be in service to the public and the welfare of people who want to try this.
Yeah, most definitely. And I love that there's those opportunities that are getting out there now.
Me too.
But I think that leads to another question that I have is the proper insurance that you might need. So licensing is one thing, you know, you're licensed, you're certified, you're legitimized to basically hold this space and do the service. But what if something goes wrong, right? And we need to call on that insurance that we have. And the reason I bring that up is I was talking to a friend of mine that owns a yoga studio that was she bought from another person recently, and was going through their insurance and trying to make sure everything was covered, and basically found out that that person had maybe enough insurance to cover their sole person, like so that person alone, if something happened in the yoga studio.
Oh,
But
I
if it
see.
happened to any other yoga teacher that was teaching a class or something else happened that person wasn't there, nothing was covered, right?
Oh,
And
wow.
I hear that a lot from a lot of yoga teachers that you know they've done the yoga teaching, they've got their own personal insurance, they decided to open a studio and then just rolled with that insurance and never
I
expanded it.
see.
And there's so many things that can go wrong with that, you know. And so, you know, are there specific companies that you've worked with that can help people with that energetic kind of healing insurance or yoga insurance just to make sure that they're covered?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there is. My understanding is it's called Energy Medicine Professional Association. I think it's EMPA. They offer professional liability insurance to all different kinds of energy healing practitioners. And I think that might come through the Healing Touch program. So you just do a little research, you can certainly get it. And it's not that expensive. And so that covers you if there, I think it covers some, if you have an in-house office, if someone slips and falls or something like that, but it really covers you for a negligence claim or some kind of tort claim that a client would make against you. They're unhappy, they feel they've been harmed, blah blah blah. So it covers that situation, and it's not that expensive. And I think you can also add a rider that if you, some people, you know, they teach little workshops and things like that. You can get a rider to your insurance policy that covers you for that activity as well. So it's definitely out there. Also, the Association for Comprehensive Energy Psychology, or energypsych.org, is their website. They also offer professional liability insurance, and it's great. I always recommend it to all of my clients. It's one of those risk management strategies that's not expensive. It's important to do. And again, it really helps protect you if there's a claim against you from a disgruntled client. And sometimes you think, well, you know, that's not going to happen, or, you know, I'm really easy peasy with my clients. Everything rolls really easily, but you just don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes it'll be maybe the client's having a great experience, but their spouse is like, this is too weird, and this is changing my spouse, and I don't like it, and they may file a complaint against you. So there's just different ways that things can go sideways. But I want to point out that professional liability insurance will not cover you if a licensing board sends you a cease and desist letter and says you are practicing medicine or psychotherapy or nutrition without a license. So, but it's a great risk management tool, and I always recommend that people add that. It's, you know, people are so funny in that. I love that you have a business background, because it's one thing I want to open a practice, but they don't really think about what's involved in terms of, yes, you need to be trained, hopefully certified. We can talk about that a little bit. But you need to develop a marketing plan. You have a website, you do your risk management, make sure your legal stuff is all in intact. So it's more than just, oh, I just want to open my door and have people come in and do energy work. There's a lot more involved than just that intention in running a business.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, and that's the hard part when I talk to people about this is that 'cause I do a lot of consulting work because of my background and you know, people that just have the best hearts and they want to do good and then you start to say, "Okay, well let's look at all this stuff, the legality side." And it's almost disheartening because you see them kind of start to push back and like, "Okay, I'm overwhelmed now. I didn't get into this work to have to do the business stuff. I got in here to do the personal stuff, you know." And so it's be and that's again, that's why I love that you've written this book is that you made it approachable for people. Yeah, there's a place to go to look for this stuff instead of having to like scour the internet and talk to people or wait for something bad to happen and then learn the hard way. You know, that's the hardest thing.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wrote the book, is like, this is a great resource, an essential tool for every single energy healing practitioner out there, whether you're licensed or non-licensed.
Right.
And we've kind of addressed the non-licensed folks, but there's other different kinds of risks for people who are licensed healthcare professionals, like psychotherapists, that want to integrate some of these energy modalities into their psychotherapy practice. Well, their risk is not being charged with practicing psychotherapy without a license. Obviously, they're licensed. However, their risk is they could be subject to professional discipline for using energetic methods that fall below the standards of care or outside their legally defined scope of practice. So every licensed profession has, the law defines what is the practice of psychotherapy, what is the practice of medicine. And so what happens is those modalities are not considered part of that definition.
Gotcha.
And there have been doctors and there have been psychotherapists who have lost their licenses to practice because they've integrated energy healing methods and probably not very mindfully. There's ways to do it. I work with licensed folks too. There's definitely ways that you can incorporate them, but you have to be very careful. And especially your patient-informed consent agreement for services needs to be exquisitely drafted so that you're protected and that the client understands and has agreed to these other, quote, non-traditional methods that you're going to be bringing into psychotherapy. But these psychotherapists are super committed because when you bring EFT tapping or even Reiki to sort of help balance the energy system, calm the patient down, the therapeutic outcomes are enhanced and people do better and they get better faster. So there's a lot of commitment. Of course, energy psychology is a huge field now, and it's really based on, you know, looking at how can we really help people that have really suffered from deep trauma and PTSD. And these energy psychology methods, especially EFT tapping, have had incredibly great results. So, but there's a lot of backlash and pushback. And so I think, you know, what I have experienced through my career and offering these services that, yeah, when they think about the legal stuff, people, they kind of glass over and they go into a place of fear. So I'm always about empowering
Yeah.
people. And so this is about, instead of getting afraid, why don't you be curious? Take a deep breath and say how this knowledge makes you a better practitioner.
Yeah, definitely.
You can be in better service to your clients if you understand all the ethical dynamics of having an energy healing practice.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned a couple things I want to bracket and get back to. And the first one is the type of paperwork that you need. And you mentioned, you know, the client consent forms and things like that. And I can't tell you how many practitioners that I know that don't have that at all, whether
Right,
they're
right.
licensed, certified, or whatever. So the importance of having some kind of, you know, waiver that's signed or some kind of agreement that's been signed, you know, and that's something that you talk about in your book. But is there more? Is there like client notes that need to be taken on a day, like a client per session basis that are kept on record? Is there a length of time that we need to keep this stuff? I know for like financial records, I get that stuff from the business side, but as far as like the client documentation, like what's the stuff that you see people missing the most on that?
Yeah, the most important, one of the absolutely core foundational pieces in your practice is your client-informed consent and disclosure statement, or I just call it client agreement and disclosure statement.
Okay.
And that's absolutely critical. That's the legal document that governs the relationship between you and when you work one-on-one with a client. And the law recognizes a high level of responsibility when you're offering your services as a professional healthcare provider to another individual. So without this, there's all kinds of issues that come up, and lack of informed consent is now considered a form of negligence. And negligence is the failure to honor the duty of due care to your patients or your clients. So it's really important. It has to be drafted specifically for you and the modalities that you offer, because each practitioner is unique. It also has to be drafted specifically to the laws and regulations that apply to you in your state. So, for instance, let's talk about California for a second. They have what's called a healthcare freedom law. There are 11 states that have healthcare freedom laws. And it's kind of a sweet spot, because what that means is that government recognizes that one of the essential healthcare ethical principles is autonomy, the client's right to choose. So the California legislation said, hey, our citizens really want to access these alternative healing arts practitioners. But it's really kind of tough because they're always under the threat of being charged with practicing medicine without a license. So the state carves out this little safe harbor, which says, okay, if you're an alternative healing arts practitioner, you can offer your services to our citizens, provided that you're in compliance with law.
Okay.
So the law is about, okay, obviously, you're not going to do surgery, you're not going to do x-rays, you're not going to tell somebody to stop taking their meds, you're not going to diagnose anything. So as long as you're doing things that you're not supposed to do, that's fine. But the other point is you have to have a client agreement and disclosure statement, a written document that discloses your background and training in the energy healing methods you want to offer. You have to write up a brief summary about the theoretical basis of the methods that you offer. There's other things that have to go into that, and you have to be very careful. You have to state emphatically that your services are not licensed by the state of California. And you have to say that not only in your client agreement, but also on your website. So when you're in full compliance, that takes that you got some space. You can offer your services to the public without that threat of being practicing medicine without a license. Now, here's been my experience, unfortunately, is that I'll work with somebody in California. And I'll say, hey, are you aware that there's a healthcare freedom law that you can take advantage of? No, I didn't know about that. Or someone said, yeah, I heard about that, but no one's in compliance. They don't follow the law, so they're not protected. So that's another reason why I want to get this information and these resources out to, all the entire energy healing community, is that there's things that you can take advantage of that can be very helpful and reduce the potential legal liabilities that you have, because we are at a fairly high risk. We're pioneers, we're out there changing healthcare and bringing these methods to the forefront. So again, there's things that you can take advantage of besides insurance, making sure you have a legally sound client agreement and disclosure statement. And here's two things that it protects you. First of all, if it's drafted properly, don't try to get it out of a template someplace or borrow somebody else's or think you can draft it yourself, because it's a very intricate legal document. And so what it does is it makes it very clear to your clients what it is you're offering and what it is you're not offering. And so it makes it very, very, it creates an energetic morphic field that is protective of and in service to your client. So there's no misunderstanding about what it is you're really offering. Clients get confused if they don't have a clear understanding about what the methods are, what you can really do for them. And when that's not clear and they don't have a clear understanding, that's when misunderstandings happen. Clients get unhappy and they sue you. The other piece that it does, it's very protective of you as a practitioner, because if you were ever questioned by a licensing board, you could show them your client agreement. This is, I clearly state in my client agreement that I do not offer any kind of medical services. I'm not going to diagnose or treat any kind of psychological disorder or medical condition. My services are not licensed. I'm only offering my services as a alternative healing arts practitioner. All the things that you can say that protect yourself. So that's one of the most important legal documents that you should have as a foundational piece for any energy healing practice. The second piece is you have a website, you need a website disclaimer. And the website disclaimer is a legal document that governs the relationship between you and visitors to your website. And that's also really critical, because you also have to make disclosures on your website about your marketing materials and who you are, make it very clear that the fact that you're even offering these services does not create any kind of a professional relationship between you and any visitor to your website. You have assumption of risk language, you have the release of liability language, you make it very clear that what it is you're offering, that you're not licensed, blah blah blah. So because that protects you, if a regulatory agency, a licensing board would want to look at your website and kind of go, okay, what is this person doing? And they do that on a routine basis. That really protects you from saying they're going to not look at you, they're not going to send you a cease and desist letter. I mean, there's words that you shouldn't use. I had someone who was saying they did energy psychology. They're not psychologists.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, that's a breach of every single Psychology Practice Act in the United States, and they shut that person down in a heartbeat.
Wow.
So, and the legal disclaimer, making sure you're using the right words. That second piece to that is making sure you have a risk management audit done on your website, the contents of your website.
Yeah. And that's
Because
something
that's
you
where red
offer.
flags can come up. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, red flags, because even words like you will learn this, or you will be cured in 3 sessions, that creates a legal guarantee. And all anyone has to say is, well, I read this on the website. I engaged Susie to do this energy healing work, and she said I'd be cured in 3 sessions, and well, I'm worse.
Yeah.
lawsuit right there because you've created a legal guarantee.
Yeah.
So
Wow.
there's a lot to think about.
There is,
So
there is. And as you're saying all this, I mean, I'm just going through the list of people I know in my head that have, similar content on their websites or have spoken this or advertised for that. And it's like, okay, wow, I've got to make sure to put this podcast out really quick so I can help some people.
good. Yeah. It's all about sharing information. And for me, it's all about not creating fear, but empowerment.
Exactly. I think that's a big thing, is that a lot of this can be very fearful in the beginning because it can be overwhelming, but it is that empowerment. So you have the confidence to practice what you want to practice and be and know that you're taken care of, that you're offering what you're saying you're offering and not offering something outside of your comfort zone or your ability to offer. And that adds to that space that you can hold for the person because you feel that layer of protection that's with you.
Absolutely, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Well, with
Yeah.
the other bracket that I put on there that I want to really come back to is the certifications.
Right.
This kind of hits home with me because I've been thinking personally about offering certifications for either Reiki, which I'm a Reiki master, so technically I can, and that, but also for sound healing. And sound healing is something that I intuitively learned. I mentored under somebody, but I never really got certified for. So how legitimate are certificates, right? Like if I, me as a practitioner said, okay, I'm going to open Adam Riehl's School of Sound Healing. I'm going to offer a 6-week course and you'll get a certificate afterwards, charge this, this is what you're going to learn, all this stuff. What's the validity of that certificate? Let's say if somebody takes that course, something happens to them, and then they come back to me and say, well, hey, man, what you taught me didn't really pan out. Where's that certificate lie? Where's the legitimacy of that?
Well, the certification, there's a difference between certificates of completion and certification.
Okay.
So let's address certification. And that's sort of the next step in terms of bringing legitimacy to the field itself. So there's a huge broad spectrum of different kinds of certification programs. So what I would like to sort of address is what are the key components of a legitimate professional certification program? And there are a few out there, but most of them are not. Because the components are, yes, you need to actually learn the modality and spend time practicing. And have a teacher that knows what they're doing and spending time to really learn and hone those skills. The second piece is you have to practice on clients and you need to practice. And that's not just 5 times.
Yeah.
It needs to be a significant amount, maybe at least 100 hours of using. And the key thing here is being mentored by someone who knows how to use that energetic modality in a therapeutic relationship and can mentor and observe and tutor you to make sure that when you're done with your program, you really know how to operate within a therapeutic dynamic. And you don't get that in most certification programs. It's like, oh yeah, you come, you go take a weekend workshop and you might do some online work and then okay, we're done. You're certified. Go out and call yourself a certified practitioner. So those are kind of the ones that are getting waned away. The other piece that you need is the ethics and legal training. Absolutely important. You cannot have a legitimate certification program without that. So that's one of the other programs I offer is I have a revenue sharing program with training organizations and schools where if they incorporate my book and the exam based on the book as part of their core curriculum, becoming certified, then they earn a commission on every exam one of their students purchases. And also, it's important to understand as a training organization that you can be held legally liable for the actions of the students that you train. So it behooves you to make sure that you are training highly professional practitioners that have an understanding of the legal and ethical issues in the practice of energy healing methods. The other thing I think is really important in a certification program is that you need to have experience experiencing that modality. So maybe during the course of your training, you hook up with an advanced practitioner and you have your own healing sessions for you using this modality because that's going to make you a better practitioner if you've actually experienced it yourself. So those are kind of the basic components of what I would call a legitimate training program or certification program. And like for instance, I offer a certificate of completion if you pass the exam. So that's a professional credential. It's you're not certified in anything, but you have demonstrated a level of competency and understanding. So if you're going to do some Reiki training, you could certainly offer that and give them a certificate of completion. If there's some way you can measure their abilities and skills at what you've trained them in. If not, you give them a certificate of attendance, which only in indicates that they've attended these. They have a, certificate of completion indicates generally means that you've gained some kind of skill in or understanding about whatever it is you're getting certificate of completion in. But if you're just wanting to offer some trainings and maybe just for people to kind of learn basic Reiki or whatever it is you want to do, you could just offer them a certificate of attendance. But then what you need to make sure you've done is, here's another document that you need, is you need a release and participation agreement for any kind of training or workshop, webinar, whatever it is that you're doing between you and the participants in the workshop. Because you can open yourself to all kinds of legal liability to participants who come if you don't have this legal document in place. Because the law recognizes a very different relationship between you as the instructor or trainer, whatever you want to call yourself, and a participant in a workshop. First of all, you can't screen them. You can screen a client. There's not, you not should not accept any client that wants to come to you and work with you. You make sure that they're appropriate for you and that there's mutually agreement around that. But the thing is, when you open yourself up to a public workshop, you don't know who's going to show up. And so there's a lot of legal issues that you need to address and make sure that you're safe and that the clients, and it's all kind of a deterrent. If someone has signed a release of liability and participation agreement and it's legally sound and it's protective and they understand what it is you're offering and they assume all risk, blah, 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 release you from liability, then it's less likely they're going to file a lawsuit against you if they claim that they were hurt or they didn't get what they thought they were going to get, whatever it is they're complaining about. And the thing is, you could say, well, that's ridiculous. Of course I got what I said I was going to give them. But you have to remember it's their perception. They're making the claim. You got to deal with it. Even though it may not have any merit, it could be just totally frivolous, but you still have to deal with that individual. So
All right. Okay. I got one more kind of scenario-based question for you. And then, but okay. So, and this is, I've seen this kind of rising up recently. It's content-based websites that sell subscriptions, right? And so let's say me as an energetic worker, I sell a subscription to my website, and on that website, I have videos of like training videos, like how to use sound bowls, how to use a tuning fork, how to use breath work, how to use these different things, right? 10-minute videos, 15-minute videos, whatever it is. And let's say it's $5 a month, and you get access to X amount of videos. If you pay $10 a month, you get all the videos. Now, the how me as the person putting those videos up and just utilizing those as just information sharing, but I am charging for the subscription to that website. And let's say somebody sees the way I use a tuning fork and says, okay, cool, I'm going to use that on my client, uses that on the client, and it doesn't go well, right? Is there legal repercussions that can happen for me that's hosting the website and putting the content out? Or does that just kind of go from, because I'm not like certifying anybody and saying you're going to get a certificate from this. I'm just putting informational videos out that have worked for me.
you're opening yourself up to a ton of legal liability. So you need a membership agreement. And to make sure it's really tricky, you have to be extremely careful about putting up any kind of training information, how to information, because all you need is one person saying, well, I did that and now because it said, oh, it could help with depression or make me feel better. And guess what? It just took me the other direction. So there's a lot of sort of liability issues around that. So you need a really strong membership agreement that, says you take full responsibility. This is just for informational purposes only. It's not giving you any kind of advice on medical or psychological issues, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot that needs to go into it to protect you because without it, you are opening yourself up to a can of worms because anyone can become a subscriber. And then, yeah, if they decide, oh, I'm going to use this on one of my clients and it really goes bad, there's a lot of contraindications to tuning forks. They're not appropriate for everybody. I mean, I work a lot with the Biofield Tuning Organization, Eileen McCusick, and I've worked with her a lot because we have to disclose that there's contraindications. And there are certain people that should not have tuning forks used on them. So yeah, I mean, you could be held liable. That person that was injured could say, well, I'm going to sue the practitioner who hurt me, but I'm also suing the person that said, okay, you can use this on me. So yeah, a membership agreement. Again, if you have a just a general website, I always advise my clients to not put any kind of training, how-to information on your website, because the legal liability is huge. A lot of these people will want to put on like a tapping chart, or this is how you learn to do EFT tapping. And that opens a can of worms, because one person could have a bad reaction to doing something on your website, and you, and right there, you're subject to a ton of legal liability. So I really advise not putting how to do things, instructional manuals, any of that kind of stuff on your website. It's just too risky.
Okay. Wow. Well, man, I have gotten so much out of this conversation. I'm so thankful for what you're doing, what you're doing, and for helping us out. The book is amazing. There's beautiful talks that Midge has done online. You can find her on YouTube. I mean, just so much information that's coming out of this, and it's stuff that we need, and it's there's ways to legally and ethically approach this. And I love the fact that this is part of the conversation now. And that we can start to legitimize, and like you said, this can be that wave of legitimacy that it needs to start to make this a viable profession that is going to be out there, and that helps support the Western medicine just like it needs to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much, Midge. I'm so honored to talk with you, and I appreciate all that you do. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I'd like to let everyone know that the book is available on Amazon, the print book and the Kindle version. And if you're a PDF person, then you can purchase the book on my website, midgemurphy.com. And then the exam is only available on my website, but it's self-paced. It's an open book. There's no rush. It's submitted online. So I certainly would encourage those energy healing practitioners that are wanting to earn that professional credential, that the exam is a good way to go. And it's $150. It's a very minor investment
Yeah.
for something that can really help you professionally.
Definitely. And it's high on my list of things to do in the next couple weeks.
Fantastic. I
Well,
can't
Midge.
wait to grade your exam.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Get that red marker ready.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Midge. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Adam. You too.
Thank you so much for spending time with Midge and I. Please check out her book. It's available on Amazon. It's called Practice Energy Healing and Integrity. Check out her website, offerings that she has, ways to get in touch with her. We'll also leave that in the show notes. Well, basins and love. We'll see you next time.